Call for the weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot, Brother Reggie, and Brother Ralph. Numbers to reach us, the number to reach us to join the conversation is 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. The listen-only line. If you don't have computer access, access to a smartphone, iPad, things of that nature, is 559-726-1300. That's 559-726-1300, and the access code is 958590 and pound. That's 958590 and pound for the access code. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. You can also listen to us streaming live. If you have your smartphone or iPad and have the TuneIn app, just in the TuneIn search engine, type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll see the icon and you can listen streaming live, or go to blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. And hit that green button to listen live. We're also on Facebook. In the Facebook search engine, type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by Brother Reg. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program on Facebook. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest, author, lecturer, and associate professor of communications at Morgan State University. Professor Jared A. Ball is scheduled to join us. The topic, mainstream media as a colonial propaganda tool for psychological warfare on black people. We'll be back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Your A-rated insurance companies offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m., with your hosts, Elliot and Reggie. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started this evening with our special guest, Brother Reg, any community announcements or anything of that nature?
No.
Tonight, we have a special guest joining us in conversation, author, lecturer, and associate professor of communications studies at Morgan State University, Professor Jared A. Ball. The topic of discussion, the mainstream media as a colonial propaganda tool for psychological warfare on black people. Dr. Ball, are you with us?
I am, and I'm happy to be here.
How are you, sir?
I'm as good as could be expected.
You're joining conversation this evening with myself, Brother Elliot, Brother Reggie, and Brother Ralph, Time for an Awakening, and we're glad to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Dr. Ball, and we'll get right to it because we're limited time. I think you can spend about an hour with us, and we want to jump right into the conversation. The topic tonight is something that you're familiar with, the mainstream media as a colonial propaganda tool for psychological warfare on black people. And before we get started tonight, I just want to kind of preface the conversation with this. We know that our people were brought here in chattel enslavement from the date of 1619 up until 1863 when the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. But some form of enslavement has continued since then. But the chattel enslavement supposedly ended during that period. But in the period in between, close to 250 years of enslavement, led to a mental captivity of our people. Some people call it post-traumatic slave syndrome that has existed afterwards. But it's obvious and it's plain to see that our people have really suffered mentally behind the enslavement of our people. You spoke in one of your YouTube clips about a quote from Frantz Fanon saying, colonialization is the complete and total conquest of a land and a people. In your opinion, is it necessary to continue a psychological war by use of the media on the minds of black people in the state that we're in? Talk about that.
Sure, and I hope that the feedback I'm hearing is just on my end.
You sound pretty good to me.
Okay, good. I was just hearing some feedback a moment ago, but that's fine. Well, first of all, absolutely, and it's not just it wouldn't just be for we African descended people in this country or in this hemisphere, but we certainly are a primary target of this kind of propaganda and the psychological warfare that is waged against us and many others for the purposes of maintaining colonial rule, imperial control, social control. But it's also important, I think, always to note that it was not just we so-called radicals who have been critical of this that have noted this, but this has been the stated goal of those who set up this most recent apparatus, most recent media apparatus in this country, which I join those who argue is the most powerful the world has ever seen. But they themselves, that would be what I would describe as my political enemies, the representatives of the ruling elite, have been very clear for quite a while that media, as one researcher notes, Chris Simpson in particular notes, they said that they wanted media to be the fourth arm of the military, that they wanted it to have the impact of an atomic bomb without the mess, where many Europeans globally and white people in this country specifically have noted the self-defense mechanism that is the projection of a negative or anti-black image. In other words, they recognize that promoting an anti-black image is necessary to not only the well-being of white society materially, but also immaterially. That is, in terms of the psychological or the psychic stability of white people themselves. So as you have an increasingly smaller number of people with an increasingly large a proportion of the wealth that is created in this world, the more it is necessary to engage in what Amos Wilson has described as psychic violence, or what Fanon himself described as the polydimensional methods of control, that it can't all be the brute force. It can't all be direct physical type of conflict or war, but it has to include attempts to manage our behavior by managing our perceptions, our public opinion, our self-concept, et cetera, so that our behavior will be equally managed and easily manipulated and maintained, so that the range of options we think are rational or acceptable, or the range of options that we think we can engage in terms of responding to all of this. And I think this is big right now in terms of all of the uprisings around the country and around the world regarding police violence in Ferguson and New York, et cetera. But this is important to from the perspective of those who rule, to managing the options we think we have that we can engage in to address our concerns. So it's exceedingly important. And again, what I always find important to note, and what I often find equally is a challenge to many of my peers and colleagues, even comrades, is the intent of those in power, that sometimes we lose sight of the intent and we focus on whether or not it's being successful on an individual or case-by-case basis, and we lose sight of the intent. And I always think it's important to remember the intent above and beyond whatever our arguments might be about the impact of that intent.
You know, you discussed earlier in your conversation about the need to manipulate our behavior. And I'm talking about black folks in particular because, you know, we're in a Black Talk Radio Network, and this is a Black Talk program. What I really want to kind of get from you or get you to expound on is the real need for the powers to be to manipulate our behavior. Now, we know in the past, especially since the advent of the use of live motion pictures and the creation of the television, that it was able to show images of everything. Worldwide, people could really see things as opposed to with radio, where you had to imagine And this country has always used negative images of other people, whether it be Asians early on, Native Americans. But the constant and perpetual negative images of black folks worldwide, and I'm talking about ones in the states or the continent of the United States in particular, why is it necessary in your mind to have to manipulate our behavior?
Well, you know, one of my favorite examples to try to address that question comes actually from the memoirs of our current Congressman John Lewis, who, while talking about his time as a leader of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and his travel throughout the continent of Africa in 1964, he talked about how everywhere he and his colleagues went throughout the continent that year, every African leader they sat down with, without exception, said that if you are anywhere to the right of Malcolm X, we see no value in our communication. We see no value in our building with you. And my point in that is that Malcolm, through the sheer will of our liberation struggle in this country and his particular individual skills, no doubt, but the movement around him that propelled his analysis and propelled his work had developed a sort of organically, to the extent that that's possible, our own spokesperson, our own analytical framework, our own analytical dominant narrative or dominant approach to understanding the world. And it had been established on you know, one of the most radical perspectives that we've ever known. And this is the kind of threat that has always led the state here and those in power elsewhere to attack it. And this is one of the reasons why I think it's obvious that Malcolm X was assassinated.
So
flash forward to go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, so I'm just saying flash forward to today, and you look at the kinds of spokespeople, the representatives of black people in this country as they speak for us all around the world. And we look at the, whether it's popular culture and entertainment, so-called, whether it's more directly political spokespeople, their approach to the world is decidedly different than that of Malcolm X's, and that this was something that had to be interrupted, that in order to maintain the increasingly exploitative relationship that we have with this state, there has to be, first and foremost, as Fanon and Amos Wilson and others have noted, you have to be the erasure physically of the first wave of the rebellious. So you have to come in militarily and wipe people out. And that was enslavement. That is the police force. That is the political assassination of some and the exiling of others. And then after all of that, you need to maintain that control that you've established from the physical violence by maintaining some sort of psychological order. That's where this example of mine, I think, is so deep when you think about who today speaks for black people in this country and around the world. And when you think about what kinds of interactions people are having who claim or are sent as representatives of black people to speak to us or for us here in this country or around the world, it's decidedly different. It's very different than where Malcolm was looking to take us. So, and this is part of the process, the reestablishment or the reimposition of some sort of other framework that is safer for the state itself.
You know, that's where I thought that you were going, or what you would say. I think it boils down to what you stated, that it's the fear of the dominant society, of the power that black folks have. And I think that, being that we had been enslaved for such a long period, but we've always had a conscious element among our people, that our people don't realize the power that we have, be it positive or negative. And when I say positive or negative, it's been negative images that have went worldwide about our people, but it's always a spark there that whatever our people seem to do, it goes worldwide. Look at this recent killings of young black folks. Michael Brown and Eric Gardner. The protest behind the young people's movement in Ferguson has basically started a worldwide, shockwaves, so to speak, worldwide, as far as what's going on here with young people. We see now that some other folks are trying to get involved to kind of manipulate things, but I'm talking about the power that our people wield once we put our collective minds together. And I think that's what you're talking about the fear and the need to constantly bombard not only our people but other people with negative images of black folk.
That's exactly my point, that those in power are quite clear of the threat. I mean, this is to their credit. We should not take them lightly. I mean, the control that they have is the result of long study, analysis, a willingness to do things above and beyond what most of us would consider even possible. In terms of the brutality and the treatment of people and the decisions that are made in terms of public policy and elsewhere, otherwise, in this country on a daily basis. Most of us wouldn't even consider doing the types of things that get done every day. So to manage that, and it is also, history is very clear, any time they take their foot at all off the throttle, there is the potential for rebellion. It is bubbling under the surface constantly, as we again see right now, which is why I think it's so important from their perspective that they reimpose certain kinds of leadership to manage the anger as it continues to bubble up. But this is exactly look, I mean, there have been overt expressed attempts by those in power to create among us, just in terms of, and not even in terms of the specifics of race, but just in terms of the specifics of class, to create within us this desire and this desire to work, for instance, that this notion of a so-called Puritan work ethic, this notion of you have to work hard, you have to, your value as a human being is associated to the kind of work that you do or the amount of work that you do. This was intentionally created as a public relations campaign, ramped up particularly in the early 20th century, specifically as a means of attacking the uprisings in the labor movement, the uprisings as they were occurring in black people, in black communities in this country and around the world, and colonized communities internationally, to create within us this idea that the point being that as we were being worked more and more by our wage slave masters, that we would see this as a positive, as a way of creating of building our character as human beings, and not see this as what they intended it to be, which was the more time we give them to leisure, the more time they have to think and study and organize this inequality out of existence. And we intend to exploit these people to the fullest in perpetuity. So to do that, we have to create other mechanisms to support this beyond just the whip and the lash and the gun barrel, because once people physically realize that they are being threatened, the curtain, so to speak, is pulled, and people are more likely to rebel in the face of that kind of overt oppression. So rather from their perspective, let's just reshape it, create this consciousness around a work ethic, and people will be less likely to realize that the amount of hours we're imposing on them to work for what little that they end up getting at the end of all of that work is a problem. And then if they do realize it's a problem, they won't have the energy or the time to organize the kind of movement necessary to overthrow it. So again, just this point, I always want to come back to that there is always this very material relationship to the immaterial process of keeping us from recognizing who we are, what we're here to do, and what this world should be like. So it's never just about, you know, giving us games to watch or movies to watch or stories to follow. It's about giving us something to distract us, to cajole us, to calm us, and to keep us from the kind of work that is absolutely still necessary.
Wow. Brother Reg, Brother Ralph, jump in here.
Good to hear you tonight, Professor Ball. One of my friends had turned me on. My name is Brother Ralph, and one of my friends had turned me on to your lectures, and ever since I've been watching a lot of them, you're saying exactly what I've always believed, but I was waiting for somebody to like just take it an extra notch. I heard one of the things you were talking about, culture, and you said culture is a set of control mechanisms to keep people in line. And this hip-hop culture that they imposed on our people, because I know that's not our culture, but you have a lot of younger folks that will defend it like it's the gospel. And they would tell, I mean, they would actually, you know, and that's where we see the sagging pants. We see a whole bunch of the tattoos, this hip hop culture. Where did that come from? I mean, I know it didn't, that's not our culture at all, but young people embrace that thing like it's theirs. And I know there was some kind of wicked tool to separate the elders from the youth. Could you expand on that, sir?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. You know, I mean, this was really why the approach I adopted really borrows heavily from that sort of anti-colonial method, in the sense, you know, and that's why I was glad that you started the conversation off with the quote from Fanon, because that's what I think is always important to remember, that even when we're talking about hip hop or culture or this aspect or the other aspect, you have to always remember that the point here is the complete and total conquering of a group of people and a piece of land or territory. But that's always the ultimate goal. And I never want that to be lost in terms of what I think should be our focus here. And that's how I think we have to understand all of these things that we're talking about. It's in the context of a power struggle, of a colonial land grab and power struggle. So when hip hop emerges in its various elements, in the 70s and then into the 80s more popularly, there, as people have always noted, there was a tremendous variety, as is the case of everything that we do. There was some that was really valuable to our struggle for humanity and liberation, and then there was plenty that wasn't, and then there was and of course enough in between those two poles. But what has essentially happened is once it was recognized that hip hop. And, you know, a lot of people who are coming up now don't always remember that there was this time where hip hop had to fight for its own validation, that it was not a given to become this international force that it has become. Uh-huh. And what ended up happening was in the process, or at least as I see it, in the process of defending its right to be here, many of our initial best and brightest missed the point of what we were fighting to get hip hop into. It was sort of the cultural version of that old civil rights, human rights argument about integration. Well, are we going to integrate, as Dr. King once said, into a burning building, or are we, you know, what is it that we're looking to join here? And in the process of getting hip hop validated and seen as legitimate, I think many of us, artists, journalists, academics, activists, missed the point that process required delivering upon the colonial system our communities, our cultural expression, our work. And then what, of course, happened, once it was realized that this was not a fad and it wasn't just going to go away, the colonial apparatus took hold. Right. And what does that, and as it would naturally do, as it always does, as it always will. So what does that mean? In the context of this country's pattern of development, it meant a handful of corporations take over the art. They take over the distribution mechanisms of the art. They further consolidate the music business in the 1990s in particular. They further consolidate the record label, the record company, record distribution business, the media business that business has an incestuous relationship with, and made it to what it is now, where you have really just three corporations that determine all of the hip-hop and R&B that we get in this country, and to what extent it becomes popular or to what extent it disappears. They determine what songs get put on radio, what songs get preference in your internet searches, what songs get preference in your iTunes and Spotify and iHeartRadio and wherever else we're finding our music. And all of this is done to wipe out the beauty and the variety and certainly the revolutionary aspects of the cultural expression, and to replace it with the grossest form, uh-huh. with the most disturbed form. And this is that line I always quote from Fanon that is my favorite as well, that the goal of the colonizer is not to destroy the culture of the colonized, but it is to hold it in a fixed colonial form. If it's destroyed, we know we're under attack, we fight, we rebel, the war is on. If it's distorted and made to appear to be this natural, developed art that now becomes this thing that, as Fanon said, speaks against us, testifies against us, then it's less likely to be attacked. And when it is attacked, those of us who critique it are seen as haters, are seen as outsiders, or people who don't love black people or don't love hip-hop or don't love whatever. Right. When in reality, we're simply saying what we are producing has been turned into a form that is used against us and to create, and particularly because of the target are 18 to 24 year, right, 34-year-olds, to shape, and I said that's even incorrect. The first initial target group are 12 to 18-year-olds. So wow. They are targeted with this negative form. It distorts their consciousness about the world, about themselves. It encourages patterns of behavior, be it the baggy pants, the prevalence of tattoos, the anti-womanness, the anti-blackness, the violence is only okay if you're shooting your brother type of message. That is what is promoted, and that is what is then, of course, used to justify the treatment of the people being so targeted. So of all the, you know, when Trayvon Martin was killed, one of the first things that was done was the media turned on him and started associating him with this negative stereotypical hip-hop imagery of the sagging pants and the hoodies, and exactly. He got kicked out of school for smoking weed, and therefore, and the point being, to quietly tell people this is why he was justified in being killed, or Zimmerman was justified in killing him. And collectively, this is done to say this is what justifies the collective inhumane treatment of the entire black population. And by the way, as the brother Homeboy Sandman, the brilliant MC out of Queens, New York, pointed out in his article about a year ago, he did the work and detailed the relationship between private equity groups like BlackRock, who invest both in media companies like Time Warner and the leading Corrections Corporation of America private prison businesses. So you literally have the so-called conspiracy exposed, where you can see how those in power are funding both the negative form of our art and the business that will benefit from the incarceration of those who engage in activity promoted through that art or who are justifiably locked up or killed by police because that art, that popular representation of the art tells the broader population that this is acceptable treatment of these people. And there it is. So you have, and that is to me the perfect example of really what I'm talking about here, the relationship of the material and the immaterial, that the literal conditions provide. The literal conditions of our communities are inextricably linked to the messaging and the images and the opinion of us and of ourselves created by this media.
Right. Now, and Professor Ball, I know you're only here for a short period of time. You had another statement. And like I said, I base a lot of things on my own experience, and that's why I take it to an expert such as you. We go on our jobs and we hear our coworkers and people around us repeating the same things from cable news media. I mean, just repeat it like it's the truth. And what I see, and you said three things that I've always gotten in touch with. You talked about psychological warfare, you talked about public relations, and you said propaganda were all the same tool, and it came under public opinion. And I know for a fact, a lot of times what this corporate mainstream news media talks about, the polls say, but I've never been polled or anyone I know has been polled. So, you know, I already see that this is just a tool. And I'm gonna put this in there because, like I said, I'm speaking from my experience. It seems like the people that watch these programs, these cable news networks or these mainstream media outlets, it seems like they don't know a thing. But the people that don't watch the news can take a careful look at what's around them, see more than they'll ever see. So I can see where it is psychological warfare on the minds of people. And one more thing, and I'm going to turn the mic over to Brother Reg. They're talking a lot now about civil rights and human rights. If you realize, this is what's coming down the pike on radio and television. Now, civil rights, you're fighting for the right to be a citizen. Human rights, you're fighting for the right to be a human being. But if you notice, these so-called black leaders we have in charge always want to talk about civil rights. And I know for a fact, this got to be some type of media warfare on the minds of our people. Could you expand on those two things for me, Dr. Ball?
Well, you know, like my godfather, Mr. Tom Porter, says all the time about his former radio work and the work that I try to do, and I'm sure is part of the work that you all do. In fact, I know it is that our job is to give black people something to say at the water cooler at work every day. it's our job to prepare our audiences to deal with the kinds of conflicts that will arise when they engage people who are coming from strictly from the perspective of that mainstream media that you're talking about, that if you, but this is why they're there. I mean, Roger Ailes and his crew, when they put together Fox News, they were very clear that this was to be a radical right conservative mouthpiece. MSNBC's leaders are very clear. This is supposed to be the mouthpiece of the liberal wing of the ruling elite. CNN is a little bit right in the middle, but the point being that they recognize they're here to create a certain consciousness among their audience, to create certain acceptable ranges of ideas and behavioral patterns among their audiences. And this is why we can get, you know, I think at one point they said that one study came out that said if you watch those who watch Fox News on a regular basis, 75% of them thought that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. So they were showing the wild distortions that come from the right. Now, my focus and my work has been more on the so-called alternative and progressive press. I think, you know, in critical of the conservative or mainstream media is too easy and doesn't really serve us. And when you look at the alternative, a lot of those same patterns, unfortunately, still exist in terms of what kind of black voices are allowed, to what extent black people are welcome to those spaces at all, which is why I think the work that you're doing and those similar is very important, because even in this new media environment, we don't really have a lot of outlets to have the kind of conversations or to share the kind of information or cultural expression that we need in order to make a lot of change. So that's definitely the intent. And I'm sorry, real quick, the second part of your question just slipped my mind.
The second part of my question was how they keep on trying to push us toward this civil rights, which I believe is a farce, because there were actually a civil rights bill in 1866 that we don't even know about. Right. So they keep pushing us to this civil rights instead of human rights, which Malcolm made it a point to tell us that civil rights has nothing really to do with us. It's our right to become a citizen. Could you expand on that and why?
No, I mean, I think that's very important. I mean, because, and it wasn't, you know, it didn't even just start with Malcolm. I mean, really, if you think of all of the rebellions among our enslaved ancestors, the Maroon activities, the attempts to repatriate to the continent, the attempts to escape this land, they were all efforts recognizing the limitations of so-called American citizenship, or the limitations of the so-called
you know, American governmental apparatus to addressing our concerns. You know, Marcus Garvey, clearly his movement was about making an appeal beyond the civil rights structure here in the United States. Du Bois even said we need to go to the UN and look to build a Pan-African struggle outside of the United States. Robert Williams and his wife Mabel Williams looked to link our struggles up with those in Cuba, with those in Vietnam, with those in China, saying the same thing in a different form, that we have to get outside of this apparatus. So even when I saw the group that emerged recently, Recharge Genocide, and working with the parents of victims of police violence and making these appeals to the UN, I see that as part of that same tradition. Now, there's also obviously a problem with that. I mean, the UN is still controlled by the United States and her allies, and is not necessarily a body that can be used to actually address our concerns in any radical way. But I think the point still is that there have been attempts. You know, Paul Robeson made these attempts. Shirley Graham Du Bois made these attempts. I mean, there's a long history now, and what I see happening, where my concern is, as far as this issue relates to today, is that there is this attempt to reimpose what I think is the worst form of our leadership back onto all of these bubbling movements and all of this bubbling energy in response to these most recent police killings. So I think that to the extent that we get caught up in supporting Al Sharpton-led efforts or Jesse Jackson-led efforts, or any of these sort of mainstream civil rights leaders that still exist today, as I think is, to me, a problem or something that we're going to have to struggle with and work around. Because there is this attempt by Obama himself to use Sharpton, to use other black spokespeople to limit the rage, the righteous anger, and the potential of that anger in our community, to make sure that whatever we do ultimately leads right back to the Democratic Party and their sponsors and supporters. So this point that you raised is, I think, really important, that we can't just be limiting our struggle or our relationships to those that are given to us by those we're looking to struggle against. We have to be looking beyond these imposed borders and the identities that come with those borders. In other words, seeing ourselves as part of a broader Pan-African community is something that has been part of this long struggle to make sure that we in this country don't get locked into thinking that this is all we have, this is all we have ever been, that we don't have any constituencies or relationships that we can build outside of this country. And those who rule have continued to make sure that potential is limited, that whatever relationships we build, this is again going back to my point about John Lewis and Malcolm X, that whatever relationships we build overseas or outside of this immediate geopolitical place is limited or controlled by those who continue to benefit most from how we're currently being treated.
Brother Reg.
Yeah, Dr. Ball, good evening.
Good evening.
I have a statement to start off with, and then I just want you to chime in with your thoughts. You know, when I try not to separate myself from young people, knowing that at one time I was young, and I just might just have a little more life experience now and made attempts to make changes. I grew up with hip-hop. It's not a culture. It's a subculture, just as jazz music as a subculture with the black experience. And it was negated by black parents at the time that jazz came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was propaganda with that, because then you came with the smooth jazz takeover. And when I look at R&B music, or I should say rhythm and blues music was very powerful, spoke to the people in the different aspects and experiences of black people, whether you're talking about love, whether you're talking about the system, whether you're talking about just making money or just having fun. It's in the culture, but it's a subculture of the black experience. When I look at hip-hop, I look at hip-hop the same way. All the music forms I just stated were revolutionary expressions of what's going on with black people's experiences either here or abroad. And I think we need to keep that in mind when we talk about it, because when I look at hip-hop, I know that there's a lot of young people that might sag their pants, but when I look at the music that was in the 70s, there was a whole lot of other stuff going on other than just smoking some weed. There was acid being taken, you know, cocaine, all these things. And I don't think the majority of young people that listen to hip-hop or even engaging in all those behaviors except smoking some weed and making wrong choices and decisions. And I think when we look at it, we just need to look at the full scope. When we look at the music differences, whether we like it or not, I don't agree with gangster rap or the negative images toward our women and our children. I don't agree with that. But when we look at the different forms of music, they were all revolutionary. And also, I like to say, when you look at it right now, as bad as hip-hop is overall and what's being done to it, look at the power that the young men and women that are engaged in it have throughout the world. And that's in every time when we look at the music forms, we look at the power that our children have, even in the negativity that it has, the power of reaching the masses. And I think that's something that we always need to pay attention to, that the power that our children have, that the powers to be do not want to see turn to them on a positive tip and a positive note of having self-determination and sovereignty for themselves and their people. That's my comment.
No, first of all, I agree. And in almost everything I do, you might have even heard it tonight, I refer to hip-hop as a cultural expression. I don't refer to it as this separate and distinct culture, which is one of the reasons why I think there's a lot of confusion around what has happened in hip hop and the relationship other communities have to it. I've just always, you know, to me, hip hop is a multi-elemental cultural expression, pan-African cultural expression that emerged much like any other has in this country. I mean, it was jazz. You know, sort of dance. There is jazz dance. There's jazz associated art, et cetera. So even jazz was multi-elemental as well, to your point. And all of these forms have their own, you know, various styles of language and dress, et cetera, just like hip hop. So it's in that way, I don't see it as distinct in any way from any other cultural expression. And to my point, in agreement with, I think, yours, it is treated just like every other cultural expression is treated, given the initial colonial relationship we have to this country. You started off by saying, you made the point that about hip hop not being its own cultural expression, or rather being a cultural expression, not its own culture. And I think that when people separate it out, we lose sight of the other patterns of the patterns that replay themselves with hip hop, as I should say. And yes, it has to be. So, I mean, I'll just leave it there. I mean, your point is a good one. That it's exactly right. And this is why it is treated as it is treated. And refashioned so it will speak against us and take it, you know, and whatever revolutionary potential that is in it. By the way, you know, there's more radical revolutionary rap music being made in this country and around the world than ever before. It's just that it's harder to be seen, heard,
and heard.
Doesn't get any radio play. And the thing is,
Go ahead.
No, all I would say is you would have to do your own research and look it up. I posted several rhythm and blues and soul music today on our Facebook page from the 70s, but you don't hear any artists talking about on the R&B or rhythm and blues about a lot of things that are going on, or you're not going to hear it on the radio because it's controlled, manipulated, just like every other art form has to, because they understand the power that we have. And the thing about it, when I look at hip-hop also with expression, whether you like it or not, that person that is good with that craft and the different elements, they're still using their mind, putting pen to paper or getting on that laptop or computer and typing their thoughts. The average black person does not have an original thought. They don't take the time to sit down and think about something in their mind. It could be something that was thought about before, but actually come with an original thought. To go back to Ralph's point, most of the times, what you hear from someone else is something that they read from someone else or regurgitated from the news. It's not an original thought. So I give some of these young people that are hip-hop credit for their art and what they're trying to do as far as their expression to themselves out to the masses.
No, I mean, you know, just two things very quickly. You know, I think, well, one, of course, we do have to remember, this going to my initial point earlier in the conversation, that whatever we may think, we do have to recognize that those in power have made clear what they think. We may bicker or debate or disagree about its effectiveness, but what I always want to remind people is what those in power have said themselves about all of this. And to this point that you raised, we do have to remember that the fifth tenet of the counterintelligence program's operation against the black liberation struggle in this country specifically called for various methods that could be used to make sure that black youth do not accept the radical black analysis coming out of that black power movement at that time. So there was this conscious recognition that something had to be done going forward to make sure that black youth, A, were not moved by the radicalism of the day to join those radical movements, and then B, as one FBI memo most famously said more bluntly, to make sure that if black youth want to become revolutionaries, that they will learn that they will become dead revolutionaries. So there is, to me, you know, and by the way, just again, very quickly, going back to this other, something I don't think I fully or properly responded to. The reason why I interchangeably use the terms propaganda, public relations, and psychological warfare is because those, the founders of these fields or approaches themselves have basically said that. This is to your point, I mean, and where I might slightly disagree is that none of us have truly original ideas. We are all developing ideas based on our influences and those around us. So much of what I argue, I've learned from many other people and have just looked to extend it in my time in my particular way. But those who put all this together, I mean, Edward Bernays said, look, I came up with the phrase public relations because the term propaganda had been given a negative connotation after the Second World War. So he's saying public relations is propaganda. And in my field of study, there is a public relations field. They teach you how to engage in propaganda. Now, they call it, again, public relations because Edward Bernays admitted this was just a euphemism because the term propaganda had been given a bad name. Psychological warfare, by its definition, is essentially the exact same thing as as propaganda or public relations. And all of this is engaged on a daily basis by those in power to make sure that certain forms of messages are promoted to us and repeated to us so that certain patterns of behavior are also generated that can become predictable, observable, and managed. So that's that. We have to understand that those in power recognize media as being tools of their rule. Brzezinski, whose daughter I always laugh is on MSNBC's morning show every day, Tobias Brzezinski, he wrote in 1997 very clearly that the internet is what will make the United States as an empire survive. In terms of length of time, it survives longer than any other empire of the past. That because this country controls the internet, the primary language on the internet being English, controls the largest entertainment and media entities. That ability to manage messaging and symbolisms and definitions and narratives will allow this country to maintain power far beyond any other empire has ever had in its ability to sustain itself. There has also been, as I said a moment ago, this conscious overt desire to separate black youth from the radical traditions of their immediate past, never mind their ancient past, and this is done to manage their behavior in the world today, to manage the continuous exploitation of their in our communities today. So when we see the cats sagging, when we see the cats using certain phrases or patterns of language or ways of addressing one another or seeing themselves, we have to see this as an intentional outcome of a process that has been designed and developed and put into to place now for decades. And to their credit, as I said a little bit ago, they put in work, man. They put in a lot of study to learn how to best manipulate us. They reward people who will promote their causes, and they punish those in various ways who do not. And that's why the dominant overlay in media and everywhere else, and in the political apparatus, the entertainment apparatus, everything is geared to is sponsored by the same people and geared to do basically the same thing: manage our anger, manage our rage, justify our current conditions, and make them seem normal and make them seem unavoidable and irreplaceable.
We're joined in conversation this evening with author, lecturer, and associate professor of communication studies at Morgan State University, Professor Jared A. Ball. Dr. Ball, I want to keep you as long as we can because it's an interesting conversation.
I'm sorry, man. Unfortunately, I can't stay any longer. I really do apologize for that.
It's no problem. We'll get you back here because this discussion is paramount now, especially now with the attempts through administrations to manage the internet. I think that that's another form of what you're talking about. More and more you see conscious talk, black talk folks popping up on the internet, and I think now is attempts now to manage the internet is really behind that. Before you leave, just speak to that issue if you can.
Well, I mean, I would encourage people to really catch up to the fight around net neutrality. And while I have to admit, I'm not the most excited about public policy debates and issues, this is one that I think that people at least need to be aware of so that we have a better understanding about what's coming down the line. And basically, the issue around net neutrality is just that the major telecom companies are working day and night to develop a less equal, a less easily accessible, and a less balanced internet than we already have. And I already argue it's not really balanced. It doesn't level the playing field. It doesn't make any significant change in the way we communicate or what forms of analysis becomes popular or what work can be done. But it's looking to get much worse. And part of that is I think I understood your question, associated with the ability to further weaken the internet's ability to offer up counter narratives, analysis, forms of cultural expression, ways for people to communicate, that by getting rid of the idea of the internet as a neutral space and turning it into an increasingly paid and tiered medium, those in power are looking to further control it so that the only forms of the internet that move with any pace, with any quickness, that anybody would want to access are those that are paid, are paid lanes, fast lanes that are only accessible by those major media companies, those companies with the most resources. And the rest of us will be put in the slow lane where, to the extent that our websites work at all, they'll be slow, ineffective, less likely to draw a crowd, and they're not really likely to draw much of a crowd nowadays anyway. But that will become even worse as we go forward if we're not aware. And my point here is just that I think we need to not lose sight of other methods of communication, other ways of getting our messages out, other ways of organizing ourselves that don't fully require the internet or don't require an internet that is easily or equally accessible. Because as we move forward, I have not a lot of optimism around what the internet is going to look like. As I've already said, I don't see it as a liberatory space, a liberating space as it is now. So I do hope people realize that just because we can blog and we can email and we can tweet, that does not mean that we are equal, that we are challenging power, and it does not necessarily mean that we have access to the kinds of ideas and analysis that we need to have, where what is increasingly happening is that those in power will have an even greater ability to promote the kinds of perspectives that will keep themselves safe than ever before, as they have already done in every other form of mass media. So what has happened to television and radio, to the music industry, to the film industry, is something that has already begun to happen, really already long been happened with the internet, but is only going to get worse. And finally, just very quickly, we have to remember the internet is military technology. The internet was developed by the military for the military. It is used by the elite and the military for what they call full spectrum dominance, where they want to control the internet the same way that they have said, as they have said, that they control land, sea, air, and outer space. They want to also control cyberspace. So the internet allows for them to have greater surveillance over us, to monitor us, to weaken our ability to function in our lives. And the less we are aware of the internet as that kind of technology, the more likely we are to succumb to it and to succumb to the power that it's going to give our enemies in increasing numbers here as we go forward, increasing percentages as we go forward. And then very finally, I really appreciate the invitation. I think the work you all are doing is essential and important, and I'm happy to support it in any way I can, and I will happily come back another time for more of all of this. So I really appreciate it.
I'm going to reach out to you in the future, Dr. Ball, when you can spend some more time.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ball. Thank you all very much. And to your listeners, to you, we say peace. And Fred Hampton used to say, if you're willing to fight for it. So peace, everybody.
Speak to you again.
Yes, sir.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We'll be in open forum. Give us a call. We've had some little technical difficulties. It's kind of ironic. We're talking to Dr. Ball about this. But I'll try to make some corrections during the break. We'll be right back. Give us a call at 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Yo, throw that Bobby Hemme DVD in the garbage, man. Oh, not that water, man. Yeah. Speak to him, Lord.
Somewhere, a black man's eyes wells up in the dark. Away from his peers. Away from his queen. Away from his offspring.
That's right.
Coming to a fork in the road and not realizing that he cannot stand still. Cause sometimes life isn't about right or wrong, just left or right.
Gotta keep it moving.
The stress, the pressure, the respect of your woman, the admiration of your child. Almost obsolete as the breadwinner when the flower is provided by the enemy. If your only resource is labor, or at least that's what they'll pay for.
Slavery, God.
what happens when they can get it for cheaper.
Man up.
Have we got an amnesia as to what a man is and what a man does?
Black power.
Is the possibility of death too great? Is the fear of physical confinement hindering your proper judgment?
I just got locked up last week.
See, death is a guarantee. And you might just get knocked just because.
That's word.
Now, your woman condescends, cause she just can't understand how she could get a job, but you cannot.
You gotta create our own job.
And look at the places you go, and the people you fraternize with, cause they say a lot about your character. And whether you are who you say you are.
Soldier.
White supremacy has struck a deadly blow, but our vital signs persist. When we know better, an excuse is just an excuse.
Stop talking.
And whether you fully comprehend or not,
Lord,
you're a man.
Stand up, let them know, Lord.
And manhood is your birthright.
Stand up.
It is your job to know what that entails, black man.
Stand up,
and it cannot be defined by our natural adversary.
Stand up.
For his ways are not ours.
Nah.
Do we allow our boys to be effeminized?
Hell no.
Do we allow our girls to be masculinized?
Hell no.
Because sheep get on the defensive? Or do we muster manhood and stand firm on our principles?
Stand strong, Lord.
I leave that up to you, brother.
Casket drop.
But as you dry your face and contemplate your next move, keep in mind the devils love doubt. And if you don't know how to be a man, they will show you how.
It's war time.
Cypher! Peace.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And we were joined this evening in conversation with Arthur Lection, Associate Professor of Communications Studies at Morgan State University. Professor Jarrett A. Ball had been with us in discussion. And we'll transition now to open forum. You can give us a call, anything on your mind. A lot of things going on with our people here in this land of our former enslavement. Call us and be part of the solution. Give us a call at 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. And join in the conversation. Brother Reg, Brother Ralph.
Yo, Elliot.
Interesting, yes. Interesting discussion with Professor Ball, talking about the media as a tool to manipulate the minds of our people. I mean, we kind of knew these things, but I'm kind of glad that he was able to articulate it in a way he was, the way he did, to kind of show us how this thing is done and how it's done systematically. We've seen over the weekend a civil rights march held by Al Sharpton in Washington, the March on Congress, I think he called it, although this Congress going out is a lame duck. And the ones coming in don't want to hear nothing from Sharpton or anybody else black. I don't know how effective that was, but we see that it happened over the weekend. But we noticed the manipulation of what has happened in Ferguson and the uprisings behind Michael Brown being slain and the Eric Garner decision not to prosecute the murdering cop that choked him to death with the illegal chokehold. We see the manipulation now of Sharpton trying to position himself, along with help from powers that be, that he is the leader of any type of voices against the government, so to speak. I want you and Ralph's feelings on that, Reg and Ralph, because I did talk with Ralph about it earlier in the week. Ralph sent me an email. And I want you to kind of expand on it, Ralph, about the young people tried to speak at one of the events but was forced off the rostrum or the podium.
Right. Nan actually called security to have them removed and said they weren't allowed to be on that stage unless they had VIP buttons. And they had no place on the stage. They didn't want their voices heard. But after the crowd became a little unruly, and said, let their voices be heard. They had no choice but to do it, or they would look like the hypocrites that they were. And Elliot, it's funny, though, because do you notice how history has a way of repeating itself, because they tell you, and I just got finished having this conversation with a young lady. She didn't know anything about the 1964 March on Washington. So I told her a good thing to listen to was Malcolm X's speech, Message to the Grassroots. He talked about how black people were fed up with what they were going through back there in 1964, how Bernice Richardson from Cambridge, Maryland, and a lot of other folks were going to go on ahead in Washington. They were going to lay across, they were going to like stretch out across airports. And Johnson had called Martin Luther King into the office and told him to put a stop to this. And Martin Luther King said, they're doing that without his consent. He knew nothing about it. So how the government called him, Roy Wilkins, and a few others to come in there, get a speech, and let them know what their plans was, what they were supposed to talk about. They're going to have Burt Lancaster on board. They didn't want James Baldwin, because Baldwin might have said something outside the goals, and calm this thing down. And basically put these people back to sleep, because this thing is getting serious. Do you see the same thing? I mean, Sharpton makes it no secret about how much he's in and out of the White House. Do you see the similarities here? Mark Muriel, Ben Crump, he's another one. I mean, these faces are starting to become more and more. We're starting to see them more and more. And they let you know. They have a meeting with the president. What's on their agenda? And the young people that were in Ferguson protesting on the ground, getting shot by rubber bullets, getting tear gas, and they didn't have a place for them to talk. And they had some gospel singer, man. I mean, when I saw that, and Jamal Bryant giving a benediction, I mean, you hoes ain't loyal. You know, come on, man. I mean, that was a farce. And I felt sorry for the people down there that really wanted real change. You know what I mean? But we saw, you know, I sent you the email earlier. It was going to call it the March on Congress, which this Congress is packing their bags to leave. Most of them got voted out in 2 weeks. Come on, man. What a joke. So, you know, like I said, if our folks, like they say, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. This is the same thing going on over and over and over and over. I mean, it was like a big show up there. And I don't know where they got that gospel singer from, brother. Because, I mean, that was terrible. And you can see she was clearly upset by the young folks that wanted a voice on that poster, on that stage. They wanted to be heard. They wanted to let the nation know what they're going through, what they're facing, what they're seeing. And they didn't want that. They just had their own agenda, man. So
well, they started this movement, and they got a right to speak, and it was a grassroots movement. They got a right to speak. They got a right to dictate the direction of the movement. You just hate when you see, because I think Eric Gardner's mother, and also Trayvon Martin's parents. His mother, his wife and loved ones, and Trayvon Martin's parents were involved in the march. And you hate to see them being used by Sharpton and others, because you sent me an email with one of the folks that Sharpton said that was murdered by the police. He had put them in his, said that he was going to do the eulogy. The parents said, you don't have, they jumped right on him. You sent me that
right, Charles Barron representing that family.
Okay.
He's a politician too, but you know, I mean, he's got a little bit more credibility than Reverend Al. You know what I mean? I mean, Reverend Al is a known FBI informant, so anybody got more credibility than that? You know what I mean?
Let's go to the phone. Reg, hold on a second. Let's go to 337 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, what's up? This is me. This is Shelby, man. I'm calling from Louisiana.
How are you, sir?
Oh, man. Hey, y'all had a good program. I hope I could have got in there and add a little fire to Brother Ball's commentary. But
well,
if you have him
you
on
can
again,
add the, you can add the fire now, brother.
No, he's gone. I want to address him. Now, I love his show. I mix what I like. I really like it. Now, What is the brother that talked about the March on Washington in 63? Is that Ralph?
That was Ralph.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that, Ralph, because I brought it up before, and that's the mess, that's the Malcolm X's message to the grassroots. Now, I memorized the whole damn speech. Malcolm said that they were going to go to the Capitol, to the airport, and lay down on a damn runway. And they wasn't going to let the planes come up. And you're right. Malcolm X called them the so-called Big Six. You go back and check that message to the grassroots. Malcolm called the so-called Big Six. And I remember the speech so damn much, Malcolm X slammed his fist on the podium. And he said, you bring me Martin Luther King Jr., A. Philip Randolph, and the rest of those so-called Big Six, and C. Bill denied over a microphone. And then Malcolm X went on to say that that Reverend Powell was talking about at his church. He said, that's what Reverend Powell was talking about. He said, all those so-called Big Six know what's happening. And then I remember this part very well. He said that that white people, Jewish people, funded the March on Washington. He gave them either $700,000 before
like
the march.
Like this one. Like this one. Like,
yeah,
like the
not,
ones who financing Nan in this march. Go ahead.
So I'm glad you said that it's the same thing. Now, someone sent me that little article, and I'm glad that sister snatched the microphone out of his damn hand. Now, I like Ralph because Ralph tell it like it is. The sister that spoke. No, I'm telling you, man.
Okay.
That's why I wanted to light a fire on next time you get him in, man, cue me in. The sister said that she was shot with some rubber bullets. I saw it twice. She was shot with some rubber bullets, and she had been on the ground for 122 days straight. I heard that, Ralph. And she said she was tear gassed 9 times.
That's
now, you
exactly
get the young people
said.
On the ground fighting like that, and you get somebody that don't let them go on stage. Man, they should have bum rushed him and just snatched the damn mic and go on. I like that spirit, man. I like that spirit. But I'm glad Brother Ralph mentioned, I want to repeat because it's worth repeating, that the same thing that happened in 63, that our people were going to have these marches. And I asked somebody today, did they feel that Reverend Sharpton co-opted because he see the movement is getting powerful. You got it going on in all over the damn country. And then he's going to call a march where he convene all of it. It's almost like he co-opted the movement, man.
That's exactly
that's
what's
what
going
like
on, brother.
That's what it looks like. And I'm glad you're calling like you see it. That's why I like to listen to you guys, because you guys call it straight, man. Hey, let the chips fall where they may. But I know we got some other outstanding brothers and sisters that be calling in. So I'm going to exit the stage to the right.
Brother,
thanks a lot, man. I appreciate y'all, man.
Look forward to your call again.
Hey, have a nice evening, man. Thanks for the commentary. I appreciate it, man. Later. Hotel.
And he's off the line, but there's a line available, 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. You know, to kind of switch, I don't want to necessarily switch gears from what you were talking about, Ralph, because it was an important discussion, but I just want to add a couple of things to it. According to a published report that was in USA Today, it says the FBI, now this killing was in August, if I'm not mistaken, but the FBI has agreed to step in and investigate the August death of the black teen, North Carolina teen, found hanging from a swing set in a predominantly white trailer park. The agency agreed to take on the case after questions was raised by the mother of the 17-year-old young man, Lennon Lacey, I'm sorry, and by the North Carolina branch of the NAACP. Claudia Lacey of Bladenboro, North Carolina, did not immediately respond to a private message sent to her through social media, but she did say in an essay dictated to The Guardian that she was concerned for her son because he was dating an older white girl. Lacey does not believe the police were involved in her son's death, But she does believe the case was treated as if it didn't matter. She told the Guardian that her son was not depressed and that he was respectful and compassionate. The Bladenboro Police Chief Chris Hunt did not immediately respond to a voicemail message left for him on Friday, according to a published report. Hunt has referred all questions to the North Carolina Bureau of Investigations, which has said that all leads in the case were addressed. William Barber II.
Hey, Joe.
William Barber II, I'm sorry, the North Carolina branch president, said that he was gratified that he would be brought into the case about the death of the high school student and football player who, according to his family, was found hanging by a dog leash and a belt that did not belong to him. In December the 12th, the Guardian essay Claudia Lacey detailed the day that Hunt came to her door and asked her to come to identify the body. When she arrived at the trailer park, she saw police wrapping up the crime scene tape. She found that odd because she thought that such tape was normally left around the scene for some time to maintain the integrity of evidence. Police then brought her to the ambulance, where she saw a black bag that held her son's body. Lacey said that Hunt came to her 4 days later and said the police found no evidence of wrongdoing and mentioned that it was suicide. Lacey found a number of problems with the case, including police never inspected her son's room, never asked to see her son's cell phone. Lennon was found wearing a pair of sneakers that was not his own and that was two sizes too small. She said her son was not depressed and was looking forward to the football game that night, and that her son was shy and would not have killed himself in a public area. So we see here that this young man was lynched back in August, and the FBI is entering the investigation now. But we know the history of these type of things, whether it's the Justice Department investigating, the FBI investigating, they'll come back with the same conclusions as the local law enforcement. Nothing ever changes behind these things. Before I move on to the next story I want to bring out, or news story, your thoughts on that, Reg or Ralph?
All right. Go ahead, Reg.
No, I'm good. Go ahead, Ralph.
No, these things are going to continue, man, as long as you have first of all, they let you know it was right in the middle of a trailer park. You know what I mean? And then the cops quickly dismiss that it was a murder and said it was a suicide. Now we don't even know the situation of this young brother or anything, but why would a young teenage man, come on, I mean, just think about it. Why would a young teenage man go to the middle of a trailer park to commit suicide?
I mean, the whole thing don't even, it doesn't even make sense. These people are supposed to be your educated investigators. The whole thing doesn't even make sense that he would go there and commit suicide on a public swing in a trailer park. come on.
In a trailer park. I mean, come on. I mean, so we already know the deal. We're not even investigators. We have no experience being investigators. But, come on, man.
Reg, did you want to mention something on that?
No, I'm good.
Before we go to our call, I just want to read a statement from the Pew Report that came out on December the 12th. Because it's kind of unwritten questions. It's always stated. You hear it stated when different presidents come up. Are you better now than you were 4 years ago or 8 years ago? You know, they talk about it in relation to people's administrations. I just want to read from this Pew Research Center report that was dated December the 12th. It says, the Great Recession fueled the crisis in housing and financial markets, and it was universally hard on It was universally hard on the net worth of American families. But even in the economic recovery has begun to mend asset prices. Not all households have benefited alike. The wealth inequality has widened along racial and ethnic lines. The wealth gap between white Americans and black Americans have grown significantly within just the last few years. According to a CNN report based on Pew Research information, the wealth gap between blacks and whites is as high as it's been in 25 years. The net worth of black households declined from $17,000 in 2010 to $11,000 in 2013. White's net worth in 2010 was $139,000, and in 2013 the number grew to $141,000, going up 2.4%. Whites has 8 times the net worth of blacks in 2010 and 13 times the wealth of black households in 2013. The gap between the two racial groups is the highest it's been since 1989, when whites had 17 times the median wealth of blacks. So we see that our people seem to be slipping more and more into an abyss. We can turn these things around financially. It's too many people that's been talking about this, whether it's been Bob Law, James Clingman, Akbar Muhammad. It's people that have been talking about what we need to do to stem this tide, because if we're looking towards administrations, if we're looking towards the Democratic Party and others to try to help us, we can see these numbers. And this is during the Obama administration, that our net worth of black families is slipping into an abyss. So that's something that we can talk about, deal with. Let's go to the phones. 215 area code. What's your name? Where you calling from? 924.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Ralph and Brother Rich. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. And we just read that report, Brother Elliot. You know, that's just basically, you know, concerned with Dr. Claude Anderson said about the, in his book, I forgot, it's Black Labor, White Wealth. I think that's the book where he says that the median income of black people in America has not really improved that much dramatically since 1865, which means that was the end of the Civil War. And when you add that into the context of over 100 years you're talking about, that's a sad commentary. That's a clear indictment of America, you know, that the income of black people has not rose. And that you know, we got it through individual black millionaires and billionaires, the Oprah Winfrey's of the world, the Bob Johnsons. But, you know, they've been Bill Cosby, but they far through between. But for our people and the athletes and entertainers, but our people as a collective, we are still a poor people. And when you talk about how whites, you know, have you know, how the gap has widened. See, white folks, they have a sick mentality, because white folks, is only a lot of them is wealthy now, but they're so racist, they so hateful, they don't want black people and people of color getting anything. When you look how a lot of whites got lifted up because of Franklin Roosevelt, they did a special on NPR one day last week, National Public Radio, about FDR. And white folks back in during the Depression, the 30s, 20s, I mean, white folks was poor. I mean, they were so poor, they weren't even poor. They was P-O. They was poor. And social programs helped get white folks out of that thing and help get them into the, you know, the industrial age, you know, with the factories, the, you know, the unions, all this uplifted the quality of living for white America. I mean, even some blacks benefited too, but mainly white folks that was really destitute, they got them out, and that's how they was over the years, they was able to, you know, create the wealth that they got now, you know, through insurance, investments, consistency for black people, the stock market and all that stuff for many years, that was shut out for black people. And a lot of black people didn't even know about those kind of vehicles. So white people have had that jump on us and stuff like that. You know, like I said, white folks, they pretty much, even though Franklin Roosevelt policies helped them out, white folks to this day, they pretty much giving Franklin Roosevelt and his legacy their ass to kiss, because they're so hateful and stuff. You know what I mean? So you see clearly the dynamics that you're dealing with today.
Well, you know, and I'm kind of glad that you mentioned that, Joe, because, you know, we were talking to Professor Ball about the media as a propaganda tool. But I'm glad that you mentioned about Roosevelt, because if you notice, during that period, the turn of the century, you had thriving black communities in areas of our people that had land. 1920, the farmers had a lot of controlled millions of acres of land in this country, and you had communities with thriving black populations. But you had a dichotomy among the whites. You had basically rich whites or well-to-do whites,
mm-hmm.
and you had a huge population of poor whites.
That's right.
Which started the Five Points,
mm-hmm.
the Bowery Boys,
mm-hmm.
the Al Capones.
That's right.
Babyface Nelsons, the Bonnie and Clydes. You had poor whites that wanted to take from these rich whites.
There you go.
And it started a whole new dynamic among white folks because they seen blacks progressing, and they were either rich or poor.
Mm-hmm.
With those programs that Roosevelt instituted, that helped start what we see now as a white middle class.
That's correct. That's correct.
Most whites are not poor like they were during the time mm-hmm. you're talking about. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's still a segment of whites that are poor, but you had a great segment of whites that were poor. Now that great segment of whites fall into the bracket of what they created as a middle class.
That's right.
And the blacks have fell down to that area of poor. And then they point to blacks talking about, oh, look at their communities, look what
mm-hmm.
they're doing. They knew that during the turn of the century, it was white communities that was like that in these cities.
Sure.
Going
sure.
around gunning down people in the street. They make like this thing is so great now, what was that, the St. Valentine's Day massacre?
Mm-hmm.
People, dead bodies all over the streets of New York City. It was whites that was running around the street gunning down people.
Sure.
And they were gunning down people because they didn't have jobs.
That's right.
So they know exactly what these things create, these
mm-hmm.
socially engineered things that this system creates.
And I'd like to chime in real quick. And my contention is no matter how much – we rob or steal or do something petty to our white people. We can never rob. We can never steal. We can never murder to the extent that they have done to us.
Yeah.
That ain't no lie, Reg.
Never do it.
That ain't no lie. You're right, Reggie. I mean, they got such a leg up on us on that. And see, when you look, and again, not to condone with these brothers out here.
And Joe, because if you think about it, they mm-hmm. robbed, they have brutalized our men. They have brutalized our women. And when I'm talking about brutalized, I'm talking about brutalized physically and mentally and spiritually. And it's continual. We can never catch up because they're too far ahead for us to catch up. If we in Philadelphia murdered every white cop, every white person, there still wouldn't be enough murder to catch up to what they have been doing systematically to us before we came here and since we've been here.
And Reggie, let me interject, and I'm glad you raised that, Reggie, because I talked to our dear brother Elliot the other night. I told him, y'all been paying attention to the CIA's with them being outed about their torture tactics and stuff to show you what kind of sick people we live in under, brother Reggie and brother Ralph and brother Elliot. They said that some of the things that they was doing to these gentlemen in Guantanamo Bay and over in Iraq and other prisons where they had these people in prison, they was torch them. We all know about the waterboarding and all that kind of stuff, the drills and the having the dogs on them. They was doing six perverted things. They was sticking food up some of the brother's rectum and stuff like that. This is documented. These are some sick people, man. And see what gets me? White folks have a way of putting fancy words on their torture. So they don't call it torture. They call it enhanced interrogation. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you're dealing with some sick people, man. And yet these are the same people, brothers, that go before the world and talk about China, North Korea, Iran, human rights violations. They got some damn nerves. I mean, you know, but see, that's that white man's arrogant mindset.
And Joe, to further your point,
mm-hmm.
and this is something that I think we all raised at one point in time. How can you have a conversation with someone that thinks and behaves like that? You can never have a rational conversation with it. It's almost like we're butting our head against a wall thinking that something different is going to happen. You might be able to have that type of conversation with a few people
on
the other side, but the majority of people, you can't have a conversation with someone who already innately, whether they psych themselves or not, to think that they're good, honest, pure people when their behavior shows you different, that they don't care anything about you your humanity. And it shows you every day. And I'm not talking about 400 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about 50 years ago. I'm talking about today. All you have to do is go online in any topic that you know that it could be something that black people might be on one side and white people might be on the other side. Look at the comments from these people that hide behind the shadow of
mm-hmm.
their laptop, computer, and iPad, and their telephone, and look at the stuff of what they say. That's how they feel. That's how I look at it. What they say on those comments, that's how those folks feel about black men, black women, and black children today, not yesterday. The same ones that say they don't have anything to do with slavery, look at their comments and think, are those comments that will be made by somebody today, or are those the comments that we've been made by somebody that had us enslaved?
I'm glad you raised that. Let me interject this to show you how right you are. Now, I'm not, as y'all well know, I'm no fan of the president, you know, but I can say that don't blind me from the racism that he deals. You know, he a Negro. It still don't blind me from the racism that he deals with. Now, look at the white woman who was the staffer for one of the Republican, ethnic incoming Republican congressmen. Now, here, she called the president daughters hoes. You know, because they, you know, people, teenagers are teenagers. You know how teenagers act. You know, Ellie, your father, Ralph, your dad. And so, you know, children are getting, you know, they bored. They don't want to be at certain events. That's children are children. And they teenagers. They got, she, because the girls was dressed like most teenagers dressed like that today. It's not in a bad way, but that's the way they dress. She referred to the Obama children as hoes. She, now, she would have never said that about Hillary Clinton's daughter or any other white president's daughter. But see, this is the kind of mindset that you deal with. Now, here this woman is a mother herself, but she felt no problem calling another woman's mother children's a whores. They dress like whores. I mean, so you see clearly these people are insensitive, and like a friend of mine told me years ago, he said, Joe, these people don't have, they're not immoral, they're amoral, which means they go back to what you said, Reg. You can't be rational, you can't have rational conversations with a lot of these people. This is why a lot of white folk in this country, that's why they would hit with those slurs and attacks down. They had the march down in Ferguson to be a group of the white mobs, and the kids attacked the marchers, called them all kinds of names, go get your welfare check, no peace, no welfare, all that kind of stuff. But they don't see the humanity in black people. They, as far as they're concerned, the police was right what they did to Michael Brown. It was right what they did to Eric Garner and other black men. See, this is the mindset you're dealing with and stuff. And that's why it just bothers me to no end when our people, and this has been a pet peeve of mine for years, my dear brothers, when black folks get up there on these holidays, especially the 4th of July and Memorial Day and Veterans Day, tell them thank you for your service. I mean, you have got to be out of your damn mind to support that kind of, you hear these people killing you, they disrespect your humanity, and you tell them you want to thank them for what? They're over there killing people of color each and every chance they get. I mean, we just... But see, I blame a lot on our so-called black leadership, or lack thereof, I should say, you know, because they are these black preachers and these so-called bogus black leaders. They do such a disservice for our people, man. Like you
and,
say,
and you know what, Joe, if you look at it, and let's just be serious.
Mm-hmm.
The people on the left, you can't trust them because they're trying to fake and play games. And the right people on the right, they're just showing you that they can't straight up. They don't like you and hate you. So we right in the mix. And
that's
I'm talking
right.
about that left and right. I'm talking about politics or whatever mm-hmm. else. That's what it is. They don't have any true love for us. The only love is what they can do to get over on us.
That's right.
And how they can take advantage.
Yep. That's right. That's right.
Thank
that's
you for
right.
your thank you for your call, man.
Hey, Brother Ellie, is there some way I can listen through the rest of the show? Because I was trying to get the number, and I want to listen to the remaining few minutes. Can I listen on the phone?
Yeah, you can do that. We had a little snafu in the beginning. You know, it's kind of ironic that we were talking about this subject with Professor Ball, and right in the beginning we had a couple systems go down. I were able to get one back up, but the other one it's a little difficult while we're on the air to get it back up. So some of our listeners that listen on with the conference line, mm-hmm. They were unable to hear it. But you know, when we put it up on the blog and things like that, they'll be able to hear the program re-aired live. So that's why you had a little difficulty, but I want to thank you for your call, man. You'll be able to still listen.
All right, thanks, Elliot.
215 error code 847. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
It is Olivia calling from Philadelphia.
How are you, Olivia?
I'm okay. And how's everybody else there?
Good. I wanted to. How are you?
I'm okay. Just trying to get over a little cold here, though. I wanted to make a couple points because I heard, I think, what, Professor Ball, was it?
Yes.
Okay, when Ralph was talking to him about human rights, now human rights versus civil rights. Now, are you all aware that as part of this $1 trillion bill that was passed, 70,000 Syrian refugees are scheduled under the human rights bill is scheduled to come into the country next year? And they got everything set up for them, their housing, education, money, healthcare, all this kind of stuff.
No, I wasn't aware, but thanks for that information, Olivia.
So-called terrorists, huh?
Yes. And then now my other point I wanted to make was Planned Parenthood was tweeted out. I don't have the exact quote, but it was Black Lives Matter. And I really took offense to that because with Planned Parenthood, Black Lives Matter to them as long as they don't make it out of the womb. So I got a serious problem with them.
Yeah, now, my sister, I'm always scared when I'm down on Locust Street passing that spot because there's always people out there protesting. And I always remember what was the guy that they couldn't catch that was like blowing up a lot of those places down in like I think Wichita and South Dakota that they had caught.
It wasn't Kaczynski.
No, I forgot that. I know you're talking about.
I think Rudolph. Yeah. I think his name was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. You go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. And then now the other thing is, I wanted to bring your attention to Benjamin Crump because somebody asked me about him a couple days ago, and I started backtracking a lot of these cases that he, you know, I don't know if the families contacted him and that's how he got involved, but all of these high-profile cases of young and, you know, mature black men getting killed, Benjamin Crump has been on board. Yep. But the problem with this is he hasn't gotten justice for anybody. Yep. Okay? he was on Trayvon Martin's case. He didn't get no justice. He was on Michael Brown's case. He didn't get no justice. The young man in, I think it was Texas, Kendrick Johnson
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was found
wrapped up in the wrestling mat.
In the rug, mm-hmm. Right, and his organs removed. He didn't get no justice for him either.
Yep.
And now he's on this Tamir Rice case. And I can guarantee you that he's not going to get justice. And they're going to use what's the ball player's name? LeBron James, who's, you know, walking around with his hands-up T-shirt. And I don't know where that money is going to, who's ever making those T-shirts. And, you know, so the thing is, their family ain't going to get no justice because he's part of the system. And if I could take it back to an old movie in 1972 called Trick Baby that was really like, I think it was from Iceberg Slim. And at the very end of that movie, it breaks it down about the boule, how we take our alleged, you know, best and brightest, and we make them become us, meaning white folks. They think like us. And they get to the point that they become totally useless to the black community, so they have to bring them in.
You know,
that's a movie that y'all should look into if you need to refresh your memory.
You know what, Sister Olivia? Just listen to Ben Crump.
Yes.
Just all you have to do is don't go by what Nan and the NAACP and all these so-called misleaders are telling you. Just listen to that man, mm-hmm. And you'll see why he lost all these cases.
Yep.
I mean, that's all you got to do.
That's true.
And it's really a shame because you can best believe that whenever Sharpton gets involved with one of these cases, that Ben Crump comes with him. They're like a package.
Mm-hmm. But see, now, what I see is they're trying to start a race riot. And this young white guy that I know, he's from South Philly, Italian, and he said to me, you know, now I think he's like 22, 23, and he said to me, he said, you know, when all the boys turn 18, because we know that the older guys most likely, you know, they probably got a record or something, so they tell us to go and get as many weapons as we possibly can get. So they all stockpile.
Yeah.
Olivia.
But, you know, but in turn, black people were standing in line, handing in their guns for goods.
Yep.
Well, if you notice, those are the only places where they have those guns for, whether it's gift certificates with Walmart or gift certificates at the grocery store. It's only in these cities. In rural areas and in white neighborhoods in these cities, they don't have no gun buybacks and gun giveaways.
Not at all.
It's only in black communities.
That's correct.
Olivia, I want to thank you for your participation in your call. Oh, you know what? Something you mentioned, Olivia, and I want to talk about this before we take our next call on the 404 area code. You mentioned about, and it struck me right away when I saw it. Jay-Z took a photograph with a couple of the players from the Brooklyn Nets, Kevin Garnett and another one. I think it was Darren Williams. And they had on I Can't Breathe shirts.
Right.
Now, Jay-Z didn't have a shirt on. He had a regular shirt on. After that, we've seen other players. And what really made my ears perk up was when Kobe Bryant had one on. Now, he don't care nothing about any black issues. He said it before during Trayvon Martin. So when he was wearing an I Can't Breathe t-shirt, I said, hey, well, now, wait a minute. So I go online. Yep. See, because we can't let white folks co-opt these moves that our young people are making. I went online and looked at t-shirts, I Can't Breathe, $25, things of that nature. Who's getting this money? Who wants to capitalize on our young people walking around with I Can't Breathe shirts or Black Lives Matter?
Correct.
Some of our people that want to march with the shirts on and to give these people a sense of that they know what's going on. If they want to wear I Can't Breathe shirt, I recommend that they get a t-shirt, because everybody got t-shirts, and take a magic marker and write I Can't Breathe on there. Exactly. Don't give these people your money.
Correct.
Keep your money in your pocket.
And two other things I want to mention real quick. You know, Puffy took the time, there's this whole situation when the verdict came out, to announce his new music channel called Revolt.
Okay.
And then to go back a little bit, remember the Puerto Rican woman that's the city councilwoman who had the black police officer fired and arrested? And I checked into the Brooklyn City Council. I'm sorry, not Brooklyn, Staten Island City Council. They got black people on their city council. How come they can't do the same thing?
Olivia, I want to thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
Let's go to 404 area code. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Greetings to you, Elliot, Reggie, and Ralph. This is Sarah calling in.
How are you?
It's Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Ralph, darn, you make me sound like I'm chopped liver. You don't
know. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Sarah, how you doing tonight?
You don't have to get all phony now. I already know. You already done said it the first time. Anyway. Y'all have a good show. I'm sorry that Dr. Ball couldn't be on for the full 2 hours, because I love Dr. Ball. I listen to his program. I mix what I like that he has, that he comes on every Friday, and he is, you know, he's very informative. So we definitely need to go ahead and book him to get a part two for this, for what he put out today. But the sister that was just on, and she was speaking about these hip hoppers and the co-opting of this movement, and I saw the same thing, because I saw a news article where Russell Simmons, up that P. Diddy, I think it was, Jay-Z, or one of them, because the names, the alphabet starts to run all alike to me with these names. They all had a meeting with the governor, Mario Cuomo. And then afterwards, I saw Russell Simmons was on Fox News being his usual self. So these are the people that you see, that whenever you have a movement, the usual players that they always pull out, and they put them out here to anesthetize the movement to kind of quiet it down. Because as Ralph said, and I texted him earlier, and I showed him that clip where on NBC where these people who was started the movement on Ferguson, where they couldn't even get on the stage. You see the guy from Man, he was over there running around with a mic, trying to snatch the mic from the young lady's hands and wouldn't let her get a chance to speak. They want to let all these so-called celebrities that they have out there, the who's who, that's always on the media, that they always have, like, the people who speak for all of black people, like Barbara Arnwine and, you know, Mark Morial, the Demjellis, the usual people. They want to have them to do all of this speaking. But as you said, Sabrina Fulton, she got her money at her husband. They got their money for Trayvon. They got their foundation that they set up. And so she gets dragged around. The only people that you don't see that allow themselves to get co-opted is Jordan Davis' parents. There's some or the other, I guess they must have seen the light, and they said, you know what, we're not going to become a part of this circus. Because you don't ever see them get dragged around all around the country, to all of these memorials that they have going on and all of these things going on. You don't ever see Jordan Davis' parents a part of this mess. No, they went to Geneva, Switzerland for that Richard Genocide Convention.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it. They're very selective in what they do. They don't allow themselves to become used in the media. As you see, Sharpton is doing, now he's got a new victim with the Gardner family. And the Rice family from Cleveland, Jameer Rice's mother, he got them. And now, of course, he's dragging around Leslie McFadden, who's the mother of Michael Brown. You see, they got their set people that they want to fixate on, and they want to use them and prop them up all over the media. But people who are smart enough, they're not going to let themselves get used. Now, this march or whatever it is they have in D.C., who's going to benefit from it? The only people going to benefit from this is the bus companies. Because whoever chartered these buses, we don't have no black bus company that I'm aware of that's still functional in 2014. So we know that the people who chartered these buses from all over the United States or wherever it is, or they went down to D.C., it is people that don't look like me and you. And they made a big killing from this movement. So once again, you're having the same people that you're supposedly fighting. These are the same people funding your movement. How can that be? As Ralph mentioned earlier, when you talk about the Big Six and what the 666 and what happened in 63 with the march, where these people, the Big Six top players, they got paid off, they got this money in order to how to run the program, what time to show up, what to say, and when to shut it down, and when to get out of town. And that's the same thing that you see happening here. How can you be holding hands and having a march with the same people that is oppressing and killing your children? It makes no damn sense. It makes absolutely no sense that you're going to say you're going to have a march, you want it to be multicultural, multi-ethnic, or whatever other new buzzwords that is out here, but these are the same people that are oppressing you. These are the same people that we are having a problem with. And you want them to be a part of your march. I saw all kinds of photos that was on the internet where it had the gay movement, some white guy with a sign up saying black gay lives matter. Now, what the hell does it got to do with him? He's a white man. He up there with a damn sign, and they made sure that they took a photo of that, and it was in the Washington Post. So these are things that is showing you all, once again, how these same white people, these same Latinos and whatever other group out there who have their hidden agenda, they found another movement that they can latch on to, and they can run with it, and they're going to use it for propaganda pieces, and black people are going to come out of this movement, and we're not going to get nothing but a whole bunch of wasted time of marching around statues and nothing else. That's all we're going to get out of this movement.
Well, if the young people keep the focus, Sarah, I think it's a lot of, because we've seen over that Black Friday weekend when the boycott kind of got really started. It had been started in September, but when it took a little traction among a lot of other people, that it was 11% decrease in sales across the board. And if you look at some of their big conglomerates, the Walmarts, the JCPenney's, the Amazons, they all said that their sales were down tremendously. So I think that if our people keep the pressure up, and see, the thing that's good about that is everybody can participate in some way in what the young people are doing. Just redirect some of our dollars. I realize that some people might not be able to spend everything with somebody that look like them, but they can start redirecting more of their dollars. If they're directing some of their dollars towards other black folks, they can redirect more dollars. This thing can really work, and this is the only thing that Europeans understand is money. That's all. They don't understand basic civil rights, human rights, being nice to somebody. They don't understand those things. They've always taken advantage. History is our best teacher. That's what they do.
Exactly.
They go in lands.
Exactly.
They take advantage. They exploit. That's what they do. So if we can
parasites, you know, they are parasitic people. And parasites have to have a fresh host. Parasites cannot survive on itself. It has to get a fresh host in order for it to exist. And that's what these people are. They are parasitic people. They always look for something in order to latch on to us. They're done with us, whether it be with our music, entertainment, sports, whatever. They latch on to you because now you are their meal ticket. They can feed off of you. And by the time your career is washed up and you're done with, you have nothing to show for it. And all of these agents and everyone else who was managing you, they're the ones who live in high on the hog. They're the ones living better than
sleeping with their mother, you know, trying to find a space on a couch to sleep for the night. Because all of the agents they have these Jewish agents, you know, let's call it what it is, because it's mostly Jews who are running these entertainment and sports franchise who are in there, and they pass the money around themselves from the owners, they pass you on to the agents who is Jewish, the accountant who is Jewish. So they keep it all in the family, but we don't do that as their people. We don't do that. As soon as we make some money, oh, let's go get a Jewish lawyer. Let's go get a Jewish accountant. You know, but Jews don't do that with themselves. They keep it all in the family. And that is something that we're going to have to learn by hook or by crook, is that we are all that we have. We are all that we got. And we have to stop letting other people use us, because the civil rights movement was supposed to be about black people. Now you got white women and white men and gay men and everybody. If something goes wrong with them, one of the first things they want to do is file civil rights violations. So these are the same people violating my civil rights. Now they want to turn around and call themselves getting reverse discriminated against and their civil rights getting violated. So it didn't even take us put 20 years before everything that we thought we had, it ended up getting snatched out from us. Because we didn't plan accordingly. We didn't know what we were doing. We had the same people oppressing us. We had the same people we had advising us and walking with us and thinking that, okay, the people that you are fighting, how the hell can you lay down and sleep next to them and have them in your doggone movement and think that you're going to get liberation? It's never going to happen. They're defeating themselves because they don't intend to give up this position that they have. It's a red carpet treatment that they're getting for something that they did not do nothing except having to be born as a Caucasian. That's all they had to do. They didn't do nothing else. But they're getting all of this red carpet treatment wherever they go, just because they happen to be born as a Caucasian.
Sarah, I want to thank you, as always, for your participation in the program tonight.
Thank you, fellas. And next time, y'all need to be a bit more enthused when I call in.
I was, Sarah. Good night.
Thank you for your call, sir. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to wind up the program. You know, but the callers are something for, I'm telling you. Rage Ralph, these the callers we have. I love the audience at Time for an Awakening, and they just bring a lot to the table. They never cease to amaze me, put it that way. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll wind up the program.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Our Lord, grant us good in this world and good in the life to come keep us safe from the torment of the fire. As we keep our hands up high and scream for justice. Ferguson, rest in peace Mike Brown and all the young soldiers out there. God help us.
Time to take a stand and save our future.
Like we all got shot, we all got shot.
Throwing up our hands, don't let them shoot us.
Cause we all we got, we all we got. God in place on the earth to get mad, it's murder. God in place on the earth to get mad, it's murder. Don't put your weapons at me.
Seen the pictures, feel the pain. Scammers, how they murder, son. Tired of them killing us. I'm on my way to Ferguson. Talk to Tip, I talk to Diddy. Then my brother's walking with me. Mother's crying, stop the riots. We ain't gotta chalk the city. I seen Cole out there. Felt I should go out there. They left that boy 4 hours in the cold out there. They killing teens. They killing dreams.
It's murder.
Yo, come on. We gotta stick together, we all we got. We all when we police got. Taking shots and I ain't talking about Ciroc. I'm talking about Emmett Till, I'm talking about Azelle Ford. Talking about Sean Bell, they never go to jail for it. Trayvon over Skittles, Mike Brown, Cigarello. Story keep repeating itself like a Biggie instrumental. America's a glass house and my revenge is mental. Rather use my brain and throw a cocktail through a window.
I got the keys to the city, still we left in the cold. Hands in the sky, still was left in the road. Ribbon in the sky, Michael Brown, another soul. Stole by the system, black men, we pay the toll. The price is your life, Uncle Sam wanna slice. Black dress code, now we looting in the night. Now we throwing Molotovs in the Holocaust. And I know they hate to hear me screaming, I'm about.
Time to take a stand and save our future.
Like we all got shot, we all got shot.
Throwing up our hands, don't let them shoot us.
Cause we all we got, we all we got. God ain't put us on the earth to get mad, it's murder. God ain't put us on the earth to get mad, it's murder. Don't put your weapons at me.
Tired of the okie doke, you lying, you Pinocchio. Driving while black, tell me where am I supposed to go? Gunshots hit the car, now I got the Holy Ghost. Excessive force was a drug, then they overdosed. Got us trying to protest, it's a slow process. Heard it's a lot of rotten eggs in the crow's nest. People praying on their feet, police holding on with heat. Turned on the news and seen a tank rolling down the street.
I seen a lot of ice water toss, and I know it's for a cause. My only question is, what we doing for the loss of Mike Brown? Cause right now I challenge you to use your talents to speak up, and don't you ever let them silence you. Cause action speaks louder than words, that's what I heard. Shot down with his hands up, that's what occurred. Man, that sound absurd. Matter of fact, to me that sound like murder. We want
proof. Heard another brother slain out of St. Louis. I'm sure the mother feel the pain, but what you famous doing? I'm sure the general population trying to be more active. But when the light finally catches you, you ice challenge. Okay, and I support the ALS just like the rest of them. But you have yet to pay your debts, so you just flexing it. Cause everybody care for a minute. Stop. People only here for a minute. Stop. And what's the point of giving if you ain't giving your all? We never get in ahead, might as well give up your heart.
I got my hands up, what else am I supposed to do?
About here, and they don't really respect Obama out here. Here, lights out, go dark, it's like a nightmare. How the fuck you play pretend, but they ain't playing fair? Playing fair, it's going down. I'm getting right here, right here, right now. Not on TV, but right here. Put your flags in the air if you don't really care. We need justice, yeah. We need justice here.
Oh. I heard he surrendered, but we all saw how they did him. Television broadcasts a confused country. I'm a resident of a nation that don't want me. What's done is done. The town erupts in fury, and I'm already hearing about this lopsided joke.
Welcome back to the Time for an Awakening. And before we wind up the program this evening, I want to thank everybody for participating in the program. Brother Reg, Brother Ralph, I wanted to mention something to you before we leave. I want to read from a published report. Boyce Watkins put it out tonight on Financial Juneteenth. I know that you saw it. I don't know whether our listening audience saw it. But I'll read it to you. Take a brief minute. And if you want to comment, you can do so. If not, we'll wind up the program. This is Financial Juneteenth, Dr. Boyce Watkins. Bill Cosby recently asked black media to remain neutral in the face of numerous rape allegations against him. Breaking his silence for the first time in weeks, Cosby is now being a bit more responsive to the onslaught of sexual assault stories being told by numerous women, all of whom say that the comedian drugged them and took advantage of them in their sleep. "Let me say this," says Bill. "I only expect the black media to uphold the standards of excellence in journalism, and when you do that, you have to go in with neutral mind," Bill Cosby told Page Six this week. But this is Boyce Watkins' comments here. "It's odd that Bill Cosby would be addressing black media in the middle of all this. It's almost as if he's saying that white media has completely abandoned him. The other odd thing is that it was white media that worked so hard to protect Bill for all these years while women were saying that he was doing terrible things to them in private. What does this mean? Also, what does it mean to be a black media outlet anyway? For example, if black media means a website like Huffington Post, Black Voices, the truth is that they're owned by the Huffington Post, the same media outlet that has been going hard at Bill Cosby over the past several weeks. TheGrio.com, another black media outlet, is owned by NBC, the same company that Bill Cosby has been with for the past 50 years. So what black media is Bill Cosby referring to? Hardly any of these outlets that have a national platform are actually owned by black people. So it's a bit strange. It's a bit of a strange request. This was Dr. Boyce Watkins on Financial Juneteenth about the request that Bill made about black media staying neutral during this onslaught. Any thoughts, Reggie Ralph?
Yeah, I have one. Like Dr. Jared Ball said, colonialism represents complete and conquest of a land and people. And we know the media is the fourth arm of that military operation, as Dr. Jared Ball said. You know, what I got to say about that whole Bill Cosby thing, it's war on us. So I'm not going to, like, I know Bill Cosby has said things about, not so financially secure folk in his past, but he's also contributed a lot of money to some of these HBCUs, to black high schools, to different organizations. So, you know, I'm not going to criticize that man and be part of that whitewashing. So, no, that's my comment on it. Whatever they want to do with Bill Cosby, I'll let the mainstream media do it. But far as myself, man, I'm not going to have no part in that. You know, I want no part of that. And the more and more they put that on my television set or I hear about it, the angrier I get. I'm just going to say there's something behind it. So that's what I'm going to leave you with, Elliot. I don't want no part of that conversation. Or what, you know, now I heard what Dr. Boyce Watkins was saying as far as black-owned media. No, the Grio, Huffington Post, that's not black media. That's garbage and propaganda. And what did he say propaganda was? Psychological warfare. So you know what? We had a good opening guest. I'm glad he spoke on some of those things. I'm going to take a lot of those things in consideration. And on Mr. Cosby, true or untrue, I'm not going to take part in that psychological warfare against that man and us. So that's my comment.
You know, and I'll close with this. I agree with a lot of the things that you said, Ralph, but let me add this. We know that anything that Europeans are involved in, it's always money at the root. I don't think this is my personal opinion. I might be wrong. I don't think this attack is necessarily about Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby is 78 years old. He's in his golden years. I think it's about what they did do. And you can see some of the evidence. When they pulled stuff off Netflix, when they pulled the shows out of syndication, that's millions, maybe billions of dollars. That's generational wealth. That's money. I'll give an example. The Lucy Show is still on in syndication. Lucy and Desi Arnaz been dead for years, for decades. But their family, their children, their children's children, and children's children is generational wealth. I think what you mentioned, Ralph, about Cosby, and people can debate how conscious Bill Cosby is. He may not be conscious at all, but he is conscious enough to give to black universities, give to black inner city schools, give to organizations. What happens down the line, maybe Cosby's grandchild comes up and is really conscious and has the money to back it up. That's a danger to white folk. I think that this is about something else, just like you said, Ralph, and I totally agree with your assessment of the situation. I want to thank everybody for participating in the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back next week, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know, all we say we know about the problem.
children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.